my friend. It seems your eyes are troubled, care to share your time with me. Would you say you're feeling low and so a good idea would be to get it off your mind? See you and me have a better time than most can dream of it better than the best. So we'll get the put on through while galaxy is a test. Whatever holds us down.
Happy Masters Friday, everybody. Great to have you here for another impromptu somewhat edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. We are presented by BetDSI.com. You can check out all of our work on GolfNewsNet.com and find us on every social platform you can imagine at GolfNewsNet. So why an impromptu podcast this week? Well, for one man and one man only, for Mr. Gary Player. As you know, if you are a longtime listener of this podcast, we've had Gary Player on for the Masters for each of the last 2 years. And this is third year in a row that we will have him on the show. And it didn't work out scheduling-wise to be able to speak with him earlier in the week as a preview for the tournament. He has a lot of things going on, as you might imagine, in Augusta while he's down there. Meets with media, has dinner with them several nights. He is incredibly gracious and magnanimous with his time. And we set up an interview for today, and you won't hear this in a conversation, but before I started recording it, he said, so why are we doing this interview today? Why are you having the interviews today? And I said, for you. Well, I'm having it for you. I wouldn't do this for anybody else. And he was gracious with his time. We spoke for about 30 minutes altogether, which you'll hear the entirety of that conversation. And just wanted to bring it to you to kind of give you some context from Mr. Player's thoughts on what has happened in the first round, which is, you know, a little bit, and then kind of draw some parallels to his career and his experiences. It is one of my favorite conversations of the year, a Masters Week conversation with Gary Player, so please enjoy.
Mr. Player, thanks for being with us. We are one round into the Masters. We have Charlie Hoffman, who shot a 7-under 65 yesterday, and Rory McIlroy was asked about what that number meant to him, and his, to quote him, his reaction was, holy shit, that's unbelievable. So what's your reaction to what Charlie Hoffman's round was yesterday?
Well, I wouldn't use that kind of language on your show, but first of all, I thought his round was fantastic. This is a very interesting thing, looking at his round and looking at the quotes that come from journalists and fathers and sons, etc., about, oh, my son's going to be so good, or this guy's so good, because he hits the ball such a long way. That's not what wins tournaments. And we saw yesterday, and my wife, who's a connoisseur of tournaments, said to me, did you see how well Charlie Hoffman putted? He held everything. Yeah. He putted like Tarzan. And that's what wins tournaments. So, and he played yesterday. He hit the ball very nicely. Extremely difficult day. But it's always the man who putts well that hits that wins the tournament, not the longest drives at all. I think these long drives are so overrated. It's the putting, the chipping, and the bunker shots. If you look at Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, they were not really great drivers of the ball, but they were number one time and time again of the world. So if we could get this through to young people, particularly who like golf, and for people who want to lower their handicaps, improve your short game.
And that seems to come through with no one other than Dustin Johnson, who has worked very hard the last 18 or 24 months to improve his wedge play, to improve his putting, and it had borne out in the results. What was your reaction to him withdrawing yesterday?
I was very, very sad for him, because what a year he's having. He's number one in the world. He had a lot of bad luck with the PGA 1 year, and he should have won it. Terrible, terrible mistake he made, a very easy mistake to make, and then he won the U.S. Open, so now to win the Masters would have been a big feather in his cap. I thought he was going to play because I watched him hitting balls on the TV, but it must have been excruciating pain and very, very sad to hear that. But there's a good message in that, and that is, and you find that out as you get older. Whenever I go downstairs now, and I do a lot of stair climbing for exercise, to try and hold on a rail, irrespective of how fit you are.
That is a good message that comes out of this. Or maybe don't wear socks when you're going into the garage.
Oh, my goodness. That's fatal. Absolutely fatal. But we're in for a very exciting tournament. This tournament, as you know, has been won. I won it 7 shots behind with 1 round to go. Art Wall won it, I think, 6 shots behind. Many players have won this tournament. And you can be 8 shots behind with 1 round to go here and win, because this golf course is like a big mousetrap with a piece of cheese waiting for you to make one error, as you saw with Jordan Spieth yesterday. And we saw last year a 7 on a par 3, a short little hole. And yesterday he made a 9 or a quadruple bogey on 15 with a wedge in his hand again. So you just don't know. This golf course is always waiting for you.
It seems like we're going to have kind of 2 different tournaments. Thursday and Friday, where it's very windy, gusty, difficult to predict. And then Saturday and Sunday, the forecast seems to be almost pristine, 75 or so, sunny, not a lot of wind. How do you, as a player, try to handle playing 2 sets of different conditions that you know are going to come your way over the course of a tournament?
Well, I tell myself how much I love that. First of all, I always enjoyed playing in wind immensely. And if you want to be a champion, you've got to love playing in all kinds of conditions. And that's the examination, that paper that's put in front of me today. That's what I'm going to handle. And the big thing is you've got to believe in yourself. You see, all these players that are world champions today and tomorrow they can't play, what actually happens is there are various reasons, but usually is for some unknown reason, something creeps into your brain that I can I do it? Can I do it? Whereas when you're playing your best and you're a champ, you say, I'm going to do it, and you don't accept any defeat. I'm going to do it, and I believe I'm the best. It's almost a self-arrogance, or a better word is self-confidence, and they lose that. And so that's what you've got to ooze with. You've got to have that within your system. Doesn't matter about the weather. I'm not supposed to worry about, well, let me tell you something that's so fascinating about weather. With golf, you play in the morning, like today. It's a lot tougher than if you play in the afternoon today because the wind is going to start going down. If you play tennis, first of all, you can have Djokovic, Nadal, Federer, and you can have the young man from Scotland who's so good. Now,
Murray.
One of those 4 in the last 5 years, you can go to Vegas and you can bet your house on that one of those 4 were going to win these big tournaments, which they did time and time again. Because when Djokovic plays Federer or Murray plays Nadal, they play in the same conditions, windy, hot, cold, whatever it is. But golf, that doesn't happen. First of all, you've got to beat 156 guys and you're playing against them at the same time, not one-on-one. And you're not playing in the same weather conditions and the speed of the greens. So golf is really, honestly and truly, I was a 4-letter man at college. Golf is the toughest sport there is.
How did you handle a lead when you got out up in a lead early in a tournament, major championship or not? What was the temptation in that next round? Was it to try to preserve a lead or was it to try to extend the lead? And were there times where that strategy, whatever you chose, didn't work out for you?
The best means of defense is attack, as we know. And so you better, to me, I always said to myself, there is no such thing as a lead until you walk off the 72nd hole. And I think that psychologically was a very good thing. And I also made myself realize that I was very poor when I was young. And I suffered like a junkyard dog as a kid, with my mother dying young at the age of 8, my father working in a gold mine, making £100 a month. My brother fighting in the war at 17 with the Americans. And I said to myself, my goodness me, this is not a war. This is a piece of cake in comparison to that. Let her rip, man. Let her rip. You either can, 2 things can happen. You're not going to get killed. Only 2 things can happen. You win or lose. So I won a lot of golf tournaments leading, going into the last round. And also, if you look at the real champions, how they manage, and this is something that's not discussed at any length, but really superstars are people that can be leading and they win. Tiger Woods, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Tom Watson, Lee Trevino, people like that. Ben Hogan, Sam Snead. The real, real superstars are the people that lead and can win. And there are only about 12 superstars in the history of the game. I believe you've got to win 6 majors to be a superstar. People in all sports say, oh, he's great. He's a superstar. They're not.
We kind of have a temptation to take someone like Dustin Johnson, who's playing dominant golf right now, but is 32 and has one major win, and want to elevate him to a status maybe he hasn't achieved compared to the other people we've already mentioned. Why do you think golf looks for that, is trying to crown the next superstar and kind of instead of letting it happen?
I suppose that's human nature. People have favorites. They want to see people do well. Others want to see somebody else do well. I mean, I'm looking at the TV today, and I must say I'd love to see Garcia win a major. He's knocked at the door for so long, and has never won one. And it would be very good for golf around the world if he could, because he's an international player, and that we need golf for rounds to improve around the world. Golf has gone off a bit because the ball has gone so far, and they started changing and making all their golf courses and spending money unnecessary and making the golf courses too tough for the members, and they resigned and they didn't enjoy playing. So we need a shot in the arm at the moment. And it would be very nice to see Garcia win. It would be nice to see a man like Rory McIlroy win. He needs to win this to join the 5 of us to be Grand Slam winners.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of people you'd like to see do well, but it doesn't have a bearing on it. It's destined for somebody to win. Your feelings are just immaterial, personal.
How do you feel seeing the Masters field this year in having an international flavor and depth to it that it's never had before, and that it gets more so that way each and every year, that you were kind of that precursor to that in this generation now becoming so deep, not only in the United States, but around the world?
I was fortunate enough to have dinner with President Eisenhower in 1961, and he said, America is a global society, which I really loved. And he also said verbatim, I'm a great believer in freedom. And he says, I'm a great believer in safety, because if we safe in our country, our people will invest in us, and others will invest in us. And unfortunately, the word freedom doesn't exist anymore. There's only freedom if you are politically correct. If you say something today that people don't agree with, that you get fired and your life is ruined. So freedom is basically going out of the window gradually. But I don't know, it's a very, very difficult thing if I may digress for a minute, to pick winners of golf tournaments. Because it's basically the man who goes out there and holds a lot of putts, and that's what we started off talking about, and who we think will win and who we'd like to win. It's very, very exciting to see all these players out there training and doing exercises, and I'm pleased that you recognize that, because I was the first one to do weight training, and I was criticized and condemned. And now you've got a certain clique of people that are criticizing Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy and Dustin Johnson and a host of others because they are doing weight training and training, and they do know nothing about the whole subject, but they profess to know about it. I'm 81. Yesterday I did 1,300 sit-ups and crunches. I ran the treadmill at max, and I pushed 300 pounds with my legs. And so I'm only getting better. I'm 81. I still average 70 on a normal golf course, or 72. And it's because I did weights. All other athletes are doing weights. But you get these people that know everything and saying, well, Tiger Woods went off because he started lifting heavy. When Tiger Woods was winning all those majors, he was bulked up and as strong as a lion. I mean, do they forget that? Go back and look at the films.
What was your approach toward trying to balance your fitness routine and your competition, your competitiveness, your preparation for that in major championships? Because obviously you have a regimen you go through kind of on a daily process, but in these special weeks, they're a little bit different. So how did you balance the two?
Well, first of all, I'd always made sure I exercised at night, not in the morning while playing. And I got in a cold shower when I was finished, and I was a great believer in ice as a young man because I was in the racehorse business and still am, and ice cured all the ailments. And now, when I was young with athletes, it was heat, but I was using ice, and now people are all gone to the ice. So I exercised and usually got in a cold shower immediately, and then I poured on the hot water, then I went back to the cold water and ended up with the hot water to get the blood circulating through your body. That was the one way. The other thing I did, which was different, I went into semi-hypnosis programs whilst playing, and also I did sort of a semi-torture routine to make me realize that I had to keep trying and that I was very lucky, and also ended up with a prayer of gratitude to make myself realize how lucky I was to be playing in the great country of the United States and around the world and winning and accumulating the best record in the world. I mean, when I say the best record, I didn't win the most majors, but I have the best world record. In other words, winning in Australia, South Africa, Brazil, Japan, all over the world, and Britain and America, et cetera, et cetera. That was my desire, to have the best world record, which I accomplished. And I'll never forget to say thank you.
I'm fascinated by this idea of a semi-torture kind of sense of preparation.
I'm not going to tell you about it anyway. So don't get concerned about it.
we'll leave that as one of the winning secrets of Gary Player.
We'll leave it for my autobiography.
Ah, there you go.
Okay.
Well, then we'll switch to how you prepared and how you played Augusta National. I find obviously there are kind of different approaches that have worked for different players over the years and have been successful. But I think the three holes that really stand out the most to me are 12, 13, and 15, because they're the places where you can score or ruin your round. How did you approach those holes on the second nine, and what did they mean to you towards your overall score each round?
Well, let's go back to Jordan Spieth and to a lot of players that are leading going into 12. And 12 has ruined a lot of people's chances of winning. And when I played number 12, I said, this is a 3.5 par. And when the flag was on the right, I didn't even look at the right. I just played. Jordan Spieth should have played that hole for a bogey, not for a par. He had a 4-shot lead. Now, if he bogeys number 12, he's got a 3-shot lead with 6 holes to go, and of which there are 2 par fives. His whole course management, I've made terrible mistakes at Augusta with course management, and so has everybody else. But he should have been aiming at the back bunker, not at the flag or the green. I'm putting it in the back bunker, and I'm going to get in that bunker, and the odds are I'm going to get down in 2 because I'm playing so well, and if I don't, I'll make a bogey, and that's not serious. But, man, the number 5s and 6s and 7s that have been made on a simple par 3 that's only an 8-iron is amazing, because it's the lowest part of the golf course, the lowest part, where the winds vary. And you see shots like yesterday. This guy, I think it was Peters, I'm not sure what his name was.
Yeah, it was Thomas Peters. He put one in the water.
He was doing so well. His tee shot there was 20 yards short of the flag. He was in the water. I mean, that's inexcusable. And I say this not because I'm bragging, but I never knocked it in the water there. I played in more Masters than anybody else that ever lived, 52 times. I never knocked it in the water. I may have knocked it in once, but I don't remember. I always played for the back bunker because I was a very good bunker player. I made sure I played it as a 3.5 par. And I know that's the first time you've heard that.
Now, did you always hit the same type of shot? Did you always hit a draw or a fade?
Yes, because the winds swirl there, and I see guys trying to fade the ball in there. Fatal. Because when you hit a fade, the ball is a soft flight, and that's so natural for the wind to carry it. If you hit a draw in there, it pierces through the wind. That was a brilliant question you had.
So you always went with the draw to get through the wind regardless of whether...
Absolutely. Irrespective, wind or no wind, make sure it is a strong shot.
And how did you approach 13? Did you try to play around the bend to try to take on the creek, or did you kind of play up onto the hill and not worry so much about trying to get there down the line, down the fairway?
Well, I played it so many times and at so many different stages in my life. When I was in my 20s and 30s, I tried to go around the corner. And as I got older and weaker, I started aiming more towards the center and then out to the right. So, and also when we played Augusta, the fairways were terrible. Hole number 2, hole number 7, hole number 10, hole number 13, the fairways were terrible. Now, there's not a weed on the golf course, and the greens are like a snooker table, and all the bunkers are raked with the machine. So they're the exact same texture. It's a different game today. The ball goes 50 yards further. You've got grooves, metal heads, lightweight shafts. It's a complete different game. You can't make a comparison between, say, Tiger Woods and Jack Nicklaus, or Ben Hogan or Sam Snead. You can't do it. Or Bobby Jones. Bobby Jones played 100 years ago. He might have been the best ever that ever lived. I mean, he certainly had one of the greatest golf swings that ever existed. And the fascinating thing is that if Bobby Jones went to most pros today for a lesson, they'd have changed his swing. That's what's so sad. And that's what's happened to a lot of the guys that are champions today and they can't play tomorrow. And I think that was the problem with Tiger. He won the U.S. Open by 15 shots. In the next couple of weeks, he's having lessons from another pro and then another pro. He got confused. Why did he have a lesson? He won the U.S. Open by 15 shots. He would have won 20 majors. That was the start of his downfall. But let's hope he comes back. We're all pulling for him. We want to see him win. He brings more people out. The sponsors are happy. The media is happy. And we'd like to see him do well. But he's got a tough job ahead of him.
Tiger's kind of at this point in his life, he's 41, he doesn't know what he's going to do next, presumably. He wants to get back, but obviously he's closer to the end of his career than the beginning of his career, 20-plus years into it. What was your thought process as you were getting into your 40s and the competition, obviously, in Next Generation came up and things started to change for you physically a little bit?
No, I disagree with you. I was the only man to ever win the Grand Slam on the regular tour and the senior tour. And I did that because when I turned 50, I was the same condition I was when I was 25. Although people tell you can't do it, I did it. I'm not far off today at 81. I mean, depends what you determine as far. Tiger Woods is as strong as a lion. He's not getting weaker at all. So, and I won the Masters at 42, and Jack Nicklaus won it at 46, and Julius Boros won a major champion, the PGA, at 48. So it depends. I have a dear African-American friend in South Africa. He just died, unfortunately, and he and I used to work together. I asked him how old he was. The man had no education. He came from Zimbabwe, and he didn't know how old he was. And he wasn't, quite honestly, he wasn't interested in how old he was. He just said, I go by each day how I feel. And so age is simply a number. And if you live correctly, we are designed to live to be 100. But everybody eats such poison every day of their life. Stereo, you know, you have meat with steroids, all the steroids that you have, chicken with antibiotics, fish with all the world's sewage in it, pork with all the hormones in it, white bread, fatty foods. People don't worry about health. So they live to 80, but they don't live to 80. They exist to 80 because they're on medicine. So it's a very debatable issue. And this is my great dream in life, is to see schools with a better system of education. I think the education in America is very poor compared to the many other countries in the world. And we should be getting better education to people on how to eat and how to live and how to greet people. I mean, one of the things that I've got 15 American grandchildren. When I speak to them, I say, how are you? Good. Not one child. Try it. Try it this week. Go and address 10 youngsters, and everyone will give you the same answer. You'll say, how are you? Good. They'll never say, fine, thank you, sir. How are you? They don't respond. And I'm on to my 15 American grandchildren all the time about manners and greeting people and striving for education. very, very important. But I have to go now because I've got all these people for lunch and they're waiting for me.
Well, you are a very busy man, and I am very grateful for you to spend some time with us during the Masters Week. We're so appreciative to when you visit with us, and it's always a blast. Thank you, Mr. Player. Thanks very much.
And God bless America. Take care.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Gary Player for being on the show. It is always an honor to have him on our broadcast, and hopefully you really enjoy what he has to say. He is entertaining. He is insightful. He is funny. He makes you think. I really enjoy speaking with him. Could for hours on end, to be truthful with you. If we have any other amazing guests along the lines of Gary Player for the remainder of Masters Week, we will certainly bring you that show. If not, then we will talk to you after the Masters. Please be sure to give us a 5-star review on iTunes if you listen to us that way. Or if you have a Roku TV app, TV box, download the GNN app for that. And if none of those things, head on over to golfnewsnet.com and enjoy our Masters coverage through the weekend. And give me a follow on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. I'll be tweeting throughout the remainder of the championship. Until next week, after we have a green jacket winner, I'm Ryan Ballingy saying thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.